No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. Or you can Skype us your questions at BBSRADIO and the number 1. We're very excited tonight to have a special guest, Takeo Yamada, who's one of the co-founders of airportlawyers.org. And I'm going to let Mr. Yamada tell you all about this rather than try to explain it myself. But he's a Seattle-based lawyer and entrepreneur who finds himself now right in the middle of the controversy over the travel ban, trying to help immigrants who have been affected by the president's executive order. Maria, welcome.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Yamada, welcome.
Thank you.
Tell us what airportlawyers.org is so I don't screw it up.
Well, it's airportlawyer.org. And
sorry.
What it is, it's no problem. It's a web app that connects refugees, immigrants, and travelers with some of the volunteer lawyers who are working at airports. It's really designed to help volunteer lawyers assist incoming travelers that might be impacted by Trump's current executive order or any other immigration issues.
Well,
and I went to the website and I noticed that I'm here in Los Angeles, that Los Angeles isn't one of the airports. Do you need somebody in the area?
Yeah, we would love to. We would love to work with Los Angeles. We're hopeful to bring on. We work with. I think we're up to now 15 or 16 airports, including a lot of the major international entry points for the United States, including Dulles, Boston, BWI, and we're really hopeful to bring on JFK and Chicago O'Hare soon. And we're certainly interested in starting a dialogue with LAX. A lot of it depends on us finding a good point of contact on the ground, because we want to make sure that if someone sends us their information, that it's going to reach the right people who have the right connections with the volunteers on the ground.
Well, and that's one of my questions, too, if you don't mind, Michael, is how do you decide to whom you're going to be working with? And somebody listening, how would they know if their eligibility would be under consideration?
Well, honestly, you know, it's such a sort of ad hoc volunteer network of the attorneys who've gone down to the airports, but we're really willing to work with any partners. We have a number of both organizational and law firm partners. For example, we work with the ACLU, we work with the Southern Poverty Law Center, as well as a number of chapters of the Immigration Lawyers Association. And so it's really a question of us finding, you know, obviously a lot of these airports have volunteer networks. But we have to find the right point of contact for those networks, and then we have to make sure that we're meeting their needs, because some people have already set up their own systems. We just like we like to expand our system because we think it's better to have a centralized point that then distributes to all the airports rather than each airport having its own different website set up.
Yeah, I think it's a brilliant idea. And Maria, let's get on a stick out there. You're out there in Los Angeles. Get some of those lawyers. But I think it's great, you know, and the thing that really impressed me about this, Mr. Yamada, is that I saw all the people standing at Dulles Airport with signs. You know, I'm here in Washington, with signs, you know, if you need a lawyer. And that's the first thought I had, was I thought to myself, gee, I wonder if there was be some way that you could, you know, that these people could connect. And then, of course, we heard that you guys have thought of this, and I just think it's brilliant. But let me ask you a mechanical question. How do I find out about this if I'm coming in from one of the seven banned countries? How do I find out about this, and how do I connect? How do I get the app?
Well, it's really simple. You don't have to download anything. You can just go to airportlawyer.org. And if you're coming from one of the seven countries, we've actually expanded to include a number of other countries as well, so we're really trying to be more inclusive about the people who have immigration issues. But really, you go to the website, and if you have a friend who's coming in, a family member, you can register them and list your contact information, or they can go online and find it. As far as how you find it, we're trying to do everything we can, you know, given that we have everything we do is donated, so it's not like we have a terrific advertising budget, just to get the word out. And we're trying to do outreach to a lot of community partners so that they can pass along our information and hopefully people can find us that way. But go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask you, how does it work? Somebody, I would assume mostly folks here in Los Angeles who are expecting somebody, that's your initial point of contact. And then once you get that information, what happens? What are the steps that unfold?
So once someone just goes to our website, there's a very simple form. You know, we wanted to keep it simple so that anyone could use it. That information then goes to a secure site where a coordinator will get a code. They can log in and then see your information. It's very secure. It's designed so that, you know, obviously this is incredibly private information. It's designed so that people can't access it. And then the coordinator will make sure that the attorneys at the airport know that you're coming, know a little bit about your situation so that they can prepare for anything that may happen. Hopefully, again, it's nothing, but if something were to happen, the volunteer attorneys at the airport would be a little bit better prepared than if, you know, someone's just walking out and being like, hey, I saw a guy pulled out a line back there. It looked like he may be in trouble. He may need some help.
And as you get bigger and bigger, as you know, you're trying to get more airports involved, and as that happens, how do you keep control of things? Because I've got to tell you, I've been involved in an immigration thing once with somebody that worked for me, and I know there are a lot of people out there trying to scam these people. How do you make sure that you know what I mean? That nobody's out there trying to scam people.
Sure. You know, a lot of that has to do with we're really just a tool for the people on site. So we're going to vet the coordinators and try and make sure that they're involved in a legitimate organization, whether it's an immigrant right organization or something like the ACLU. A lot of these places have organizations that are really leading the charge. And then we're not necessarily taking responsibility for what happens on the ground. We're just trying to better convey this information. And then we're also obviously very concerned with security. That was one of our biggest priorities. So that also comes in with the making sure that the coordinator, like it's me here in Seattle, login information doesn't circulate. And it's really kept within a small circle. And that's really one of the things we hope to do to help secure it.
Can you tell us what your personal experience has been since you started doing this?
Sure. I actually, you know, I'm one of those people who the right after the executive order wanted to go volunteer. A friend of mine was volunteering through IRAP, and she brought me down to the airport. And I, you know, I'm very fortunate. I'm an entrepreneur, so I have a slightly more flexible schedule. So I was able to stay for and help coordinate some volunteer attorneys that were on site in the days following the executive order, and really be down at the airport for, you know, 14, 15 hours at a clip. And when I was down at the airport, I met Greg, who was contacted by a legal technology company called Clio. And they were brainstorming about, well, you know, what are some of the technology solutions that we can develop? And they actually reached out to me. I had met Greg at the airport and asked, you know, if you could have one piece of technology, what would it be? And my response was really, we need a tool so that we know who's coming in before they arrive at the airport. You know, it's really challenging to try and help people if you have no idea who you're trying to help. You know, anybody who's seen lawyers in action or work with lawyers or watch lawyers on TV, you know, there's an incredible amount of preparation that goes into any kind of legal action. And at the airport, everybody's kind of operating on the fly. So the more preparation we can have, the better we can be.
And have you encountered any of these problem situations personally?
No, we've been very fortunate in Seattle that we've been able to generally work through everything since following the first few days. The last week has been going very smooth, and some people will be delayed a lot, and then we try and help families on the outside, people who are concerned on the outside, to let them know whatever information we can get from the airport about what's happening back there, whether there are long lines, whether there's just a big delay in Customs and Border Patrol processing, to make sure that they have the information. You know, the scariest thing for families and people who are waiting on the outside is not knowing what's happening and not knowing what to do if something bad happens, and we can help with both those things.
Well, and that's absolutely all the feedback that we're hearing, you know, whether you're watching CNN or whether you're talking to people that have actually been there, that's what we're hearing, is that the uncertainty is the real thing that's got people on edge. You know, nobody knows what's going on. And later in the show, we actually may have a couple of kids on who feel traumatized by this whole thing. And again, it's the uncertainty of it. So you guys are just doing, you know, I think what you're doing is exactly what's needed. But let me ask you, do you have any idea, are you keeping track of the people that use the app? Do you have any idea how many people have used the app?
I can't speak for the other airports. Again, you know, trying to make sure that the information isn't flowing around to lots of people. I can only speak
right
to Seattle. And we usually get right now between anywhere from 3 to 8 in a day of people sending in notifications. And to your point about fear and having it be a really uncertain situation, we're really now starting to see people who aren't even on one of the 7 listed countries who are sending us their information just because they're very concerned about what's going to happen when they arrive in this country. And they want the security of knowing that there is someone at the airport who, if something does go wrong, is going to be able to try and help them.
Oh, absolutely.
And how do you manage to find them? Because isn't that like a no man's land from when you land to after you get through immigration?
It is. And, you know, we try and get whatever information we can. You know, we work with the port. Obviously, we can't get information direct from CBP, but, you know, we'll work with the port, we'll work with other passengers, and we'll try and get whatever information we can. We'll try and build a picture. And we've been very fortunate that in the last week we haven't had a situation where we really needed to file a notice of appearance with the Customs and Border Patrol and set someone up with an attorney. For the most part, we've been able to resolve everything with time and with communication.
And you haven't gotten any negative feedback or any pushback from the airports that you guys have been working in?
Again, I can't speak for every airport. I can only speak for SeaTac, and we haven't gotten a lot of air pushback. You know, we very much try and maintain a professional atmosphere as the volunteer attorneys at the airport. We're not staging a protest. We're not trying to cause trouble. We're really just trying to help with the information and help making sure that everything runs smoothly. I think for the most part, that's really everybody's end goal, is we'd like to make sure that everybody who gets off a plane here can exit the airport and go where they're going. And if we do our part, then all we're doing is contributing to that. And so I don't think anyone's going to get angry at that.
No, I would
think that
they would. Well, I would think that would help the airport. You know, the last thing the airport wants is a lot of people stuck in limbo in the middle of a terminal. So I would think that they would be happy to have you guys. But I know you've been following the news on this, and the latest, although there's nothing definitive, there's at least talk going around that as early as tomorrow, the president might change the executive order. Are you guys trying to prepare for that, like anticipate what might be done, and so that you can tweak what you're doing?
Well,
or is that up to the individual attorneys?
I think one of the great challenges, at least it has been so far under the current administration, is it's really difficult to predict or prepare for what's going to happen. I think from our perspective, you know, we've built a useful tool, something that's flexible, something that's really crisis agnostic. It doesn't really matter what the crisis is. We can pivot it and modify it to meet those needs. And I think that, to me, is the best way to handle this situation. Is obviously we've been made very aware of the president's intention to either continue filing lawsuits or issue a new executive order. And all we can really do is try and make sure that we're as flexible, that we're as prepared as possible, so that both through the volunteer network, through airportlawyer.org, and through all the volunteer networks, we can be responsive when we see what the information is, when we see what the executive order contains.
Now, I know that the Greg you mentioned is Greg McLaughlin, who is an immigration attorney. Do the attorneys that you are looking to recruit have to be immigration attorneys?
No. We work with all kinds of attorneys. We have immigration attorneys who are on call for each shift that the volunteer attorneys work at the airport. But obviously, a lot of the immigration attorneys who we work with have a ton of cases that they really need to be working on. So our goal was really to set up a way for a lot of lawyers to help. So we have volunteer lawyers, volunteer law students, volunteer paralegals who can be there, who can do a lot of the intake, who can triage the situation where necessary, and then pass things on to the immigration lawyers where their expertise is needed.
So that sounds like that's a really efficient use of manpower.
That's really what we're going for. We don't want this burden to fall on any one person, one group of people disproportionately. So keeping that flexibility is a great way to make sure that everyone does get to feel involved, everyone can be involved, but involvement doesn't necessitate, you know, basically getting a part-time job and dropping 20 hours a week at the airport.
Right.
That's a great way to lose the organization. So
burnout, too.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It looks like you guys are doing a great job. I can tell you that I have certainly served with attorneys who come in on election day, you know, to monitor elections. I've monitored. I'm not an attorney, but I've worked with attorneys in the past that have monitored elections. And I know it's tough to put these things together. You know, they bring. I've been a poll watcher. I've been, you know, done all sorts of things. But they bring a whole bunch of attorneys together at the very last minute to do this. It's very, very complicated. So I think that the fact that we've heard about very few problems at the airports with lawyers that are involved leads me to believe that you guys really have it together.
So well, you mentioned two. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think that speaks to, you know, I've been very proud to be a lawyer. I'm always proud to be a lawyer, but especially in the last few weeks, I think the legal profession has really conducted itself in a commendable fashion to really step forward and say, you know, this is about respect for the law. And that commitment has been really, really sort of full-bodied and appreciated. So
as a lawyer, excuse me, Maria, I just have to ask this question because we're on this particular point. But as a lawyer, what do you think about the Ninth Circuit's decision? You think they did the right thing? You know, there's people out there saying that these guys are legislating from the bench. Again, I'm not a lawyer, but I can't see that. I think they're doing their job. What do you think?
Well, far be it for me to speculate on what the Ninth Circuit is doing. And you know, I, as a lawyer, I'm always, you know, the idea of getting too speculative gives me the hives. But I will say that I appreciated their sense that it's, you know, not having this law in place doesn't have direct harm, whereas having it in place and then taking it away would have harm. And then I also really appreciated their sense that you know, the administration was moving very quickly and making a lot of demands without having necessarily built a record at the lower court. And so I think that it's really important for a case like this to create evidence, to have discovery, to build the record rather than trying to rule on it based on some of the early assertions. But again, I'm terribly uncomfortable trying to say exactly what I think. But I certainly appreciated the decision. I actually thought it was terrifically conservative, if you will, rather than trying to say, let's put this law in place, and then maybe if it's wrong, we'll take it away again. That doesn't seem like a particularly sensible way to go about it. And particularly, so much of the problems with this executive order have been very chaotic implementation and announcement. And if we're going back and forth between this is a valid law, this is not a valid law, that just only increases the chaos, and it only increases the uncertainty. And those are really everybody's enemy, regardless of your politics in this situation.
And the seven countries, you added some to the list, you said, as well. Can you share that information with us?
It's more that we're trying to be open-ended. We're not really ruling out any country right now, and it's more because we do want to start accommodating travelers from all origins who are afraid of what's going to happen when they arrive. Not just legal, but the community outreach to make sure that people from all countries know that, you know, there are attorneys here at the airport, and we're going to help you if something goes wrong.
And I'm sorry, go ahead, Maria.
We keep stepping on each other. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
Has anybody been affected negatively by the ban?
I'm not talking
about being pulled out and over-scrutinized and wait and et cetera uncertainty. Has anybody been sent back?
Sure. Any number of people have been sent back. Absolutely. We had here, there was a Somali gentleman who, in the very first days of the order, he arrived here. He'd gone through the many, many months of process and interviews to get a refugee visa. He arrived here in the country, and they pulled him aside. They took his visa, and they put him back on a plane to Vienna. And his family, who was here at the airport waiting, they only found out about it because someone on his flight back to Vienna was nice enough to loan him a phone on the plane, and he was able to call out and say, oh, they're sending me back to Austria. But we've definitely seen plenty of people sent back. We've seen a lot of people who were denied boarding abroad. I've worked with a number of families who, you know, either they canceled their ticket, they were told to cancel their ticket, they were told they're not going to be allowed to board a plane, and they had to delay their travel back to the United States for days or even a week. And these are people with all kinds of visas, from U.S. citizens to green card holders to people traveling for business. There have been a lot of people who face some negative impact from the executive order.
Yeah, and we certainly have seen a lot, at least reported on the news locally out of Dulles, more of you know, what you said in the latter part of your statement, that they've been denied boarding. We've seen a lot of that at Dulles, where they just never even got to the airport. I think this, you know, this is having a major impact. But since the court's decision, have you guys had anything to do at these airports? Have you?
No, it's. At least at SeaTac, it's been very smooth. You know, you still have the occasional person who might receive some additional questioning, but we've been able to get people out. And I think, you know, I think that a lot of it has to do with people, the Customs and Border Patrol people, having an understanding of what they're supposed to do, knowing the expectations, and that lets us on the outside understand everything, and it creates at least some predictability to the system. But you know, we still want to be prepared because, again, another executive order may come down. It may have more countries. It may have other countries. It's kind of an unpredictable environment. So I think our instinct is to try and be prepared and stay prepared.
And does this become a new fixture at American airports now that we have immigration lawyers? I mean, we used to have a thing called Traveler's Aid. I don't know if they still have Traveler's Aids at airports, you know, but they used to have one at what is now Reagan Airport. And that's if you were lost, or, you know, if you needed a couple of bucks or something, these guys help you. Are we now going to have a lawyer booth in every airport?
Well, I can
every
tell you
that. International airport?
I don't know that we will, but I certainly think it would be terrific if we did. Even if another executive order doesn't come down, no matter what happens, I think that immigration and that process only ever gets more complex, and I think it's fair to say it's going to get even more complex under a Trump administration. So having legal representation, people to help, even just people to answer questions and put you in touch with resources, I think that's valuable. I can't see any downside to having volunteer attorneys at the airport going forward.
And let's promote your social media, too, because that's obviously how you're going to get the word out, because you have a Facebook page and a Twitter account.
Yes, we do.
Let's get that information out there. Give us your Facebook and your Twitter account and everything.
The Facebook page is of course, at Facebook Airport Lawyer, and then we are at @airport_lawyer on Twitter. And you can see our website. You can reach out to us that way. And we're pretty responsive on there, but especially go to the website, airportlawyer.org. If you have concerns, if you want to volunteer, if you want to be the point of contact at your airport, all of that information, you can do all of that there. And we would love to have more community partners. We would love to have more volunteers so that we can keep growing this. And we can, you know, the more people use this, the more effective it's going to be to make sure that the volunteer attorneys who want to help people have every possible piece of information they can get to help you.
And well, basically protecting refugees and travelers.
Yes.
Yeah, and you know what? I think it's a great idea. And, of course, we have so many lawyers in Washington. Let's get them into the airports. Let's get them out of politics where they're just screwing things up anyway. All kidding aside, I really think you're doing a great service here, Mr. Yamada. And thanks so much for being with us tonight. And I hope that you will come back soon as this situation develops and that we can continue to plug your work, because I think it's very important. And if you email me, you have my email address. If you send me your Twitter account, your Facebook, all that stuff, we'll make sure it's posted on the BBS radio website.
I have that all, Michael. So save that step for you. And of course, that's how the grassroots campaigns go from an idea to a march on Washington, right?
Yeah.
It unfolds.
And I do want to say, you know, the technology companies, Clio and Neota, the two companies who really donated an unbelievable amount of time to build this over 48 hours. You know, this project started on a Friday and we launched on a Monday, and that's a really terrific example, both of the spirit of those companies who really put themselves forward to help people, and also what happens when everybody's committed to a project in a really positive manner, and everybody's willing to donate their time. It's incredible what we can build in short order that immediately starts helping people.
Yeah, well, which is great.
Yeah, from a guy who took more than 48 hours to learn how to make a call on his cell phone and required the intervention of all his children to make it happen, I find your accomplishment amazing. And thanks so much again for being on the show, and we hope to have you back soon. And good
Thank
luck.
Thank you. It was,
yes,
it was an
good
absolute
luck.
Pleasure. I'd love to be back. Thank you.
Perfect. Take care.
Right. You too. Bye-bye.
Awesome. Bye-bye. Yeah, 48 hours, basically, from concept to app, which is fabulous.
Yeah.
So, as he said, it's @airport_lawyer is the Twitter account, and the Facebook page is that Airport Lawyer. So it's pretty easy, which is nice, too, because that makes sense. So we definitely will put that embedded with the podcast. If folks are not listening live, they can download and they can get their activism up if they want, right?
Yeah, get your activism up. That's what I say, which we're going to talk about when we come back, but we're going to take a brief break and then we'll be right back. And we're back. And we're here with Mrs. Fodderwatt and her two sons, Aiden and Daniel, who have invented a game. I'm going to let them tell you about it. But basically, they live locally here in the Washington area. They go to a school in Virginia. And the younger son, I believe, Aiden, had a mathematics assignment where he was supposed to develop a game. And he developed a game called Immigrant's Nightmare. And welcome, Ms. Fodderwatt. Please tell us what this is all about.
Thank you for having us on the show. I have Aiden here.
Hello.
So Aiden and Daniel, Aiden is 10 years old now. He came up with the game when he was 9 years old, and Daniel is 14 years old, both sitting here. So Aiden, you want to explain about the game?
Everyone here is talking with the center.
I can't hear.
Yeah, you're breaking up, Aiden. Can we get him in one spot so we're having a hard time hearing him? Aiden, are you with us?
Mm-mm. Bad connection.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We have a weak connection, it looks like. Mrs. Fodderwatt, can we call you back? Can we try to reestablish a connection? I'd love to hear what these kids have to say.
Sure.
Are you all using separate lines?
I think they hung up.
They did.
See if we can get them back. And okay, well, we're trying to get them back in a minute, but these kids invented this game, and it comes out of this child, according to the article I read, this the 10-year-old Aiden's anxiety about what's going on in immigration. So,
which is it also is it in the psychological community we call that self-soothing. So he took something that was of concern to him, and then channeled it into something that actually was assistance. Unlike folks who self-medicate, and you know lose themselves in either drugs or alcohol. So think about that, how great he turned that negative energy into a positive project, which is actually brilliant, you know, regardless of how applicable it is or how successful it becomes.
That's absolutely right. Absolutely right. You see that, Mrs. Brown? You don't need a voodoo doll. There are other mechanisms you can use. But no, you're right.
Well, you're a perfect example of that, Michael, with your whole DC for statehood campaign.
You know, to soothe me.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, you're taking your agitation and creating activism and hopefully creating a situation where you folks won't be taxed without representation.
All right. Well, you're going to be the first witness at my commitment hearing. But do we have the boys back with us, Doug?
Yes, we are here.
Oh, okay, good. We're just having a hard time hearing you. We'd love to hear what Aiden has to say.
So, did you hear what I said in the beginning, that Aiden is 10 years old,
yes,
and he came up with the game,
yes,
when he was 9, and Daniel is, yes, and 10, 14, and he's, okay, hold on a second.
Yeah.
Hello, this is Aiden, and...
Aiden, welcome.
Well, yes, it's such an honor to be here. And I'll first talk about the game and how I had the idea. So
okay. You
thought, I'll explain it in more detail, because everything you said before was okay. So when I got this math game, the Make a Board game for a probability, I was also watching so much news, and it was at the time that it was, the election was like at its most of who would be the nominee. So while I had this game to do, I was watching those shows and news debates. Yes, and
we're losing
connection again.
No, we hear
there.
You now.
You're good.
You just have to make sure you're speaking right into the phone, honey.
Okay, so I had that idea to combine the two and make the Immigrant's Nightmare. And I went, the first idea I had was to go up to my mom and show her my very first sketch. It was just a paper. It had just four little, like, pathways and said, Immigrant's Nightmare at the top. She was not only impressed, but astonished that I made such a game about immigration. And for more detail and another point of view, I'll let Daniel talk now.
That's
Hello,
cute.
I'm okay. Daniel, Aiden's older brother.
Hi, yeah. Daniel.
So Aiden's first sketch, he had at the center the U.S., and the U.S., in this case, is surrounded by a gigantic wall, and we had a hypothetical president who we named Benjamin Montana. We just made him up. He was the president of the United States. He was the one who made immigration law so strict for America and built this gigantic wall around the U.S., basically restricting all immigration. And at the corners, we had several different countries like Mexico, China, India, South Korea. And so each player in this game is trying to go from their original country, so India, Mexico, China, and South Korea, and they're trying to get into the U.S. Despite the many obstacles that are in their path, like the gigantic wall. So in order to do this, they have to... one way they can do this is by entering legally, so they have to collect certain assets and become educated on their journey to the U.S., and but they can also come in illegally, so by they can use a way to bypass the wall and the strict immigration laws, and they don't really need any education or assets to come in.
Well, it sounds like a really creative idea, and now I want to ask you a couple of questions. First of all, you and your brother just sound like brilliant young men, and it's great to have you on the show. But let me ask you, been some controversy. I understand that they're not accepting the project as a math project. Is that still the case?
So last year when Aiden turned in the project, there was some controversy. So rather than continuing to argue with the school, we kind of just turned it into something, bigger, and I'm going to give the phone out to Aiden to further explain this issue.
Okay.
Nice sharing amongst brothers.
Yeah. Aiden, are you there?
Yes. And
so has your project been accepted?
No, it was rejected by the school. And in NPR, I said I was mad at the school, but I realized that the school is just following the orders. That even if they didn't want to show the principal and get me in the office and make me not too happy for the day, it was what they had to do. So if any people, the staff, or even the principal of my school is listening, please forgive me. And yes, it was rejected. They thought it was too racist and inappropriate. And I may not have thought that, I thought it was what was happening, and now it actually is in this present day. The travel ban and that was recently repealed, and other things that people want to do, it's happened. It's going to happen, and it's happening right now.
Yeah,
I'm curious, Aiden, as a 10-year-old, why is this so important to you? What is it speaking to you, and how, this issue?
It's so important to me because, I mean, not many people know about immigration. And in fact, when a few people from my class, they didn't even know there was a travel ban. And We want to teach the people the struggle that immigrants go through to get into our country. As well that immigrants, they're not bad, not all of them are so bad that, oh no, they're going to destroy our country. And going back, these men are actually fairly smart. Like, Steve Jobs, his father was a Syrian and he went to the U.S. And without Apple, so much things that would have happened. iMacs, iPhones, iPads. And in fact, Apple makes more money than an oil company called Chevron. And if any Chevron employees or staff are listening, it's the truth. So don't get angry. Einstein was an immigrant. Einstein.
Well, I also heard, and I was very touched by this, you guys should know that Aiden and Daniel are American citizens. They were born in this country. They're as American as any of us. But one of the things that Aiden said, I think it was Aiden, said in the article was that he worried about being able to visit his grandmother, who's still in Iran. I was going to
mention that right now, actually. I can't see many of the people in Iran. Well, I couldn't since it was repealed. And those people are so eerily close to me, and it was heartbreaking to see that I couldn't see them face to face. But obviously it was repealed.
Well, so that's a key point, and thank you for pointing that out, Michael, that this is personal, too.
Yes, it's personal. And you know what? All politics at some level is personal, I think. So let me just say to we have a few other things we want to talk about, but Aiden and Daniel, maybe we'll have you back again if you'd like to come back and talk more about this. I think you guys are brilliant. I know your mom is very proud of the fact that you stood up and taken the initiative to do this. And Aiden, I want to be your campaign manager when you run for governor of Virginia. Okay, so keep me in mind because you're a very impressive young man. So thanks for being on. And Mr. Fotowat, thank you so much for calling in, for allowing us to call you and get you on the show.
Yes, and congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yes, thank you very much for having us on the show. We just created a mobile app.
Tell us how to get it.
Yeah. Perfect.
How do you get it?
You can go to the Android and iPhone and search for Immigrant Nightmare. Right now it's the beta version. We created a crowdfunding for that. We spent so far $25,000 and we're hoping that the second version of it can be out, which is more tested. And the goal is children of this generation play with it and they learn the ups and downs that immigrants go through. Therefore, 40 years from now, we have adults that are more aware and they know about crisis. So they can come up with out-of-the-box solutions.
Good.
Believe it or not, maybe another talk show we can talk. Daniel and Aiden came up with an idea that is really going to help the situation in the borders of U.S. and Mexico. If I have time, I can mention that now.
Well, we'll have you back to talk about that because I'd love to have this, all three of you back. And I think this is very creative, and this is what our program is about. It's trying to get people to come up with creative solutions. So thanks again for being on, and we'll contact you. We'll have you back on.
And the crowdfunding, we should help promote that too.
Yeah, how do people get to your crowdfunding site?
The crowdfunding is on GoFundMe, and it is called Immigrant Nightmare. And we appreciate if everybody could help a little bit. We don't need too much pressure on people, but it's a crowdfunding power. We want to educate America and reach out to the hearts of all these children.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks
Continued
again.
Success.
Yes, and
Thank you very much for
crowdfunding site. All right. You're welcome. Thanks, guys.
Yes. Thank you so much for having us. And remember, GoFundMe. Please help
Okay.
Us.
We'll promote that on the website, too.
And thanks for being such a brilliant 10-year-old.
Yes.
We'll talk to you again soon. Thanks. Okay. Amazing. And one thing I just want to add for these guys that you, just to show you how much thought they put into it, the reasons that the four countries include China and South Korea is because they did research and they found out that most immigrants come from these four countries, Mexico, China, South Korea, and I forget what the fourth one was. But, you know, this isn't something these kids put together willy-nilly. They put a lot of thought into it. They really did.
And it's, like you said, Michael, it's what we try to do on the program is to promote entrepreneurship, people who think outside the box, maybe, you know, folks that have an idea and don't know how to get it traction. I remember the Wolf Sanctuary man that we interviewed. I mean, we are all over the map, but that is the theme of it, is empowering. And so this is adorable. And my goodness, you're right about their intelligence and how aware they are.
But, you know, what a perfect segue. And this is why I admire Maria Sanchez so much, because she's just so good at this. But that's the perfect segue to getting people involved, because that's the next thing I want to talk about. Oh, my God, these town hall meetings over the last few days. What do you think about that, Maria? You know, there's some people saying it's liberals taking a page out of the Tea Party book. And some people are saying there's just angry people showing up. But no matter what, it's a tough thing for these congressmen and senators that are out there trying to do this.
Well, you know what I wonder about is, why are we still having the discussions? It seems like people just can't. What I say is, give the guy 100 days or better, 6 months. But then he can either get the job done, or he can look like a buffoon. Or if he doesn't watch his impulse control, he's going to sink his own ship by himself, unless he surrounds himself with people who say things that he probably doesn't want to hear. And who knows how likely that is with somebody who's a narcissist. Even though I'm a supporter, I also see his warts. So don't get me wrong about, you know, he can do wrong or impeachment or, you know, whatever, because any of that is possible. But I don't think that we are giving it a chance. I don't know what your thoughts are. It's just like people keep licking their wounds.
You know, I mean, certainly I've felt some of that sentiment too, you know, that, and I said that a few weeks ago when this whole thing started. But the one thing I will say, that they could be doing a better job of ameliorating people's fears by not coming out the way they are. I mean, I agree with you. You know, give them some room to breathe. Maybe not jump on every little story, you know. Kellyanne Conway, did she really violate the law? Yeah, you know, and she shouldn't have done what she did, but don't we have bigger fish to fry than who's buying Ivanka Trump's jewelry? I mean, don't we really? But on the other hand, when you come out and you call refugees and you call people trying to get in this country murderers and drug thieves, drug dealers, you know, saying we're getting the bad people out, we're getting the drug dealers and we're getting the murderers out. I mean, you're exacerbating the situation. I think that's what, people are reacting to. And, you know, the thing that I found, really interesting about the town hall meetings was, one commentator saying, you know, the things that everybody's upset about with the Affordable Care Act are, the things they keep on bringing up are, the main provisions of Obamacare, pre-existing conditions being covered, keeping your kids on your health insurance until they're 26. So even if we modify it, we're going to get a version of the Affordable Care Act. Hopefully a better version, right? Because it's very expensive in some places. So why don't they say that? Why do they have to say we have to abolish Obamacare? Yeah.
I think part of it is there is some scare tactics going on, which I don't agree with. I also think part of it is that he is a man on a mission, and he's a bull in a china shop, and he's taking care of business his way. And maybe he'll get more temperate. I don't know. I hope so. But the other thing is that yesterday or Friday it was that they announced that a preponderance of the American people don't know that the Affordable Care Act is Obamacare. They think it's two separate entities. And so when they're asked surveys, depending on the word that's used, they're answering it not understanding that it's one and the same, which I found interesting. It's like in NPR, I was listening to them, and they said that's why they deliberately bounce back and forth between each word in their broadcasts so that people maybe subliminally or subconsciously understand they're talking about the same thing. It's not two separate entities. And I thought that was pretty terrible that people didn't know that. It's, and I do want to mention, Michael, I don't know if you know this, but Al Jarreau passed away this morning.
Yeah, no, I do. It breaks my heart.
And he had just retired last week, and I'm thinking, dang, he didn't get to enjoy that.
Yeah, I think, and I may be wrong, but I think he was scheduled to appear with a bunch of people at the Howard Theater in a few weeks, which is here in Washington. But yeah, you know, we all love great jazz vocalists. And it just reminds me how damn old I'm getting.
Oh, stop. He was only 76, but they say tonight at the Grammys, it's going to be one of the longest tributes because of all the musicians that died last year.
Yeah. A lot of them, right? David Bowie and
Prince.
Prince,
one of the Eagles.
Oh my God.
Yeah, goes on and on. So it's
on and on.
May you rest in peace. Which is another lesson to all of us to live each day to the fullest, because that's all we know we've got for sure.
And since I can't come up with anything more brilliant than that to say, let me just say thanks for listening, America. We're out of time, and we'll see you next week.
Yes. Have a great week.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.